Well, hey there. Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
I'm Judy.
He's not really Judy.
No, I'm Patrick.
Patrick Barrett, who has been on this program before. He's not the mayor of Central Square.
No, that's Michael Monestine.
Michael Monestine.
I'm like the janitor of Central Square.
The janitor, actually. And for those who don't know, there is, in addition to the Giganto building that's directly across the street from the studio, better known as Mass and Main, there's another building on the other side of Columbia. It's being reconstructed and expanded a bit.
The only project actually on Mass and Main.
That's right.
So, yes, the hotel project at the Tuscanini site, which
that's
we'll call it, 907 Main, coming to a summer near you next year.
That's right. Yeah. So anyway, he's a man about town. So Patrick and I both have a fair amount to do with all things Central Square.
That's true.
It is true. We did mention Michael Monestime, and actually the wonderful murals project.
Can we just catalog the accomplishments of Michael Monestime? The mural project, the bid.
The bid,
he's
which is
tall.
The business improvement district, which is not official, doesn't exist.
Not official,
yet.
But we have a little bit of a taste of the bid, they're calling it.
They're calling it the taste of the bid. It's, you know, honestly, when I was on this Central Square committee back in the 1990s, you know, various things we talked about for the future. And one was creating a business improvement district.
Oh.
So people, you know, did some research, looked at this, it never got off the ground. And then time and time again, people would talk about it.
Well, you get a bunch of crotchety old property owners, evil to the core, like myself. Talking about,
I can attest to that.
Yeah, we're terrible people. Talking about, you know, costs of cleaning the streets and why should we do that? Why should we participate? Bah! But Michael has done a good job of actually bringing a lot of people to the table who were very much against this a decade or more ago, and we seem to actually be doing it. I dropped my sandwich on the sidewalk today. I picked it right up and I ate it. It was clean. I couldn't believe it. I recommend it. Anybody can eat.
By the way, Michael Monestime's official role currently is as the executive director
of the Central
Square. Central Square Business Association.
That's right.
Which, and it's nothing set in stone yet, but if a business improvement district gets established, my understanding
is he would be the...
So the business association might just morph into that?
That's the idea. So the business association would become the bid. I'm not sure if Michael would like to run that or not, but I think he's certainly the best guy for the job.
He is the man.
And no disparagement to his predecessor, Robin Lapidus, little shout out. But Michael, you know, he's got a lot of energy and he's been doing a lot of good things.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, the best, you know, instead of talking about something like creating a business improvement district, there's nothing better than demonstrating it.
And I got to tell you, it's really uncharacteristic for the city of Cambridge to actually do something. So, like, yeah, I applaud his vigor.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think it was strictly speaking related, but the thing is, putting up all these beautiful murals that are starting to show up here was just sort of a good gesture. But the fact that it's happening in conjunction with the discussion about creating business improvement districts, certainly there's a kind of synergy.
It's a little bit like, I mean, Christmas in the good sense. I lived down the street from Central Square, as you know, and I walked down the street, I see new murals popping up. The place looks alive. We're just walking down the street right now, all the trees are lit up.
Yep.
It's like, my God, what a little bit of Christmas lights and some paint can do to spruce up an area.
Yeah.
But like, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, no, it really does. And, you know, actually, when I've seen some of the photos, I haven't met any of these yellow-shirted ambassadors that are sort of doing some of the cleanup and things. But when I saw the pictures, I saw them taking off stickers off of poles. I'm thinking, they're taking my job away.
You would have loved it.
I said, thank you.
The big pole right in front of Graffiti Alley, it was almost like a vivisection. They cut down the middle and like opened it up like an alien autopsy.
Believe me, I've done it many times where you sort of, I take my little pocket knife and I would slice through that and pull out about 14, 15 layers of posters.
One of my band stickers from like 1993 was probably at the center of that.
What was the name of your band?
I don't want to say out loud.
Okay, we
terrible.
Won't go there. Okay. Anyway,
go ahead.
So Central Square is kind of in a happening place, which is particularly great. And one of the things that was actually at the city council last night was an additional pot of money to support additional accoutrements for the police substation going in 628 Mass Ave.
That is actually, I mean, that has been in the works for so damn long. And can I say damn long?
Yes, you can do it.
Good, excellent. Damn.
damn.
It's been in the works forever, and we finally got traction. I would say no thanks to Michael Monestim again, to some degree. And of course, you know, it took us about 6 years to get a kiosk, and Harvard Square saw that we were getting one, asked for one, and then 2 days later they get it approved. So
I have a great idea. Let's just go up one night with a flatbed truck.
I love it.
And some tools.
Yeah.
And let's just like unbolt the Harvard Square kiosk.
Yes.
Throw it on the back of a truck and
tear
it down here.
I am absolutely.
We'll get some MIT students to help out.
Capture the kiosk.
Capture the kiosk. There we go. We'll customize it. You know.
Well, there's so much
put
talk
a mural
about
on
that,
it.
That damn kiosk. I just can't believe that we haven't stolen it. I agree.
Yeah.
We'll just do that. Right. Michael, work on that.
You know, the funniest thing is, you know, not to leave Central Square, God forbid.
No.
But up in Harvard Square, of all the ideas, you know, after all this controversy about the Harvard Square kiosk, and there's yet another meeting happening later this month, you know, the best suggestion I heard was tear the top off the current subway entrance, move the kiosk, and just stick it as a roof over it. You know, I looked at it, I said, yeah, that worked for me.
In classic, too many cooks in the kitchen, they can't decide whether, you know, it's a public amenity or should belong to somebody or should sell newspaper. I mean, it's just like, it's a classic example, classic Cambridge and probably municipal example of when, you know, a million people pigpile on the same topic and can't decide on the time of day.
Yeah.
So, right, we should steal it. That's the only answer. It belongs in Central Square.
That's it.
Done.
Capture the kiosk. The new civic endeavor. I'm all for it. Yeah. Actually, the police presence, I'm not 100% sure about what the extent of the police presence actually translates into. Certainly, there'll be police going in there sort of as a check-in station.
You're jogging my memory. Remember when we were talking about the kiosk a couple of years ago and, like, city councilors who will remain unnamed, Nadeem, were talking about, like, you know, the militarization of Central Square. And I was like, are you kidding? Did he know what the police station used to be in Central Square? Like, it was like, my God.
You know, it's kind of funny when people talk about doing something that's police related. There always is a sector who goes crazy and say, yeah, it's the militarization of the police. My favorite was when they said that it was when they first decided they were going to have these police dogs. Mm-hmm. So they were going to get an expenditure for these trained dogs. And one of the city councilors, and I won't name him, right? Kelly. Actually, Craig was, you got it. They said, oh, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to bring in like a police attack dogs, whatever? So at the next city council, and they brought one of the dogs, and the dog's name is Kevin. And everybody, including the city councilors, were petting the dog.
Kevin, the attack dog.
And they all had this look of like, my God, what were you thinking? You know, I mean, you know, the Cambridge police are not sort of like the Gestapo.
They're, you know, I mean,
they're pussycats.
They are. They're some of the nicest people I've ever met. And, you know, I just find it, it's almost like we try, like, art imitates life, imitates art, where, like, we try to somehow mimic what's going on the national stage, pretending that that is what we're dealing with in Cambridge, and it's just such a farce.
Right, right. I remember there was one thing, I mean, I guess I do understand it a little bit. They had some event, and they refused to cooperate with the police to say what were they were planning to do, so the police didn't know. So just in case, so they brought they have this vehicle where you can, you know, put a lot of cops in like a clown car, you know, and then they can all pop out if there's an incident,
that
right? You know, it's a big vehicle, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, it turned into a big controversy with a city council committee hearing.
Sure.
And everybody's concerned about the optics.
Of course. And what were the optics? So they had the big family event in the park. Was it 2 months ago, 3 months ago? I brought my son down and that vehicle was there.
Yeah.
And there was about 300 kids climbing in and out of
it,
playing with riot gear and helmets and clanking each other. It was good, wholesome family fun.
Yeah, yeah. Gotta watch them optics.
Yeah, well, the optics.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things, you know, not to get into controversy, God forbid.
Please.
Right? But, you know, on the Central Square Advisory Committee, we had a series of meetings having to do with what's loosely called placemaking,
right?
And one of the last ones was had to do with specifically about public health, and there was this issue about, you know, some of the more problematic people that are sort of find home in Central Square. So the notion, you know, I think one of us, maybe it was me, actually expressed the notion that some of the storefronts, actually where Amazon is right now, facing Carl Barron Plaza.
Is that Amazon with the A or
the lowercase?
Lowercase, yeah.
Uppercase, right? Is it an orange? What shade of orange is it? You know, these are the things we really worry about.
The questions of our time.
Yeah, But so there, anyway, I suggested the horrifying notion that those storefronts should be sort of really active. So you might have retail that spills out.
You're terrifying me. Go on.
Yeah, just like over here down at Jill Brown Run Park area, where you know, Cafe Luna was, and I guess
now is some kind of something's happened there. Frozen pudding stand.
Right. But the thing is that there was a real interaction between the storefronts and the little plaza in front, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a great thing.
It
so
is.
I mentioned that, and then one person who was associated with the Needle Exchange around the corner, which mm-hmm. is one of our many social service agencies, was bothered by the fact that that commercial activity might be disruptive to her clientele who like to spend time there. And at the end, I was just horrified.
You'd have to probably sedate me. I don't know what I would respond. I don't even know how I would respond to that.
But I made the point. I said, listen, we want everybody to be safe and happy in the square. But the thing is, we don't want Central Square to continue forevermore to be defined by problematic behavior, but by good behavior. And we'll find a place to accommodate everybody.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's you know, people talk about what's fair, equitable. I think it's not fair to allow Central Square, given all the things that we do, the cultural district, the work of the CSBA, the music venues we have here, the arts and culture, which really only exist in Central Square, to be defined by, you know, this actually small percentage of use in the square.
Right.
And that's been our message for a long, long time.
Yeah.
It's just like, we don't mind that you're here. We don't mind we share these spaces with everyone in the community, but we're not going to be defined by one sector of that community.
Right, exactly. So if a family wants to bring the kids to Central Square, we don't want them to get chased out of Central Square. We want everybody to enjoy the square and not be always catering to the lowest common denominator.
Exactly.
So, and you know, the only way to do that is you sort of have to.
That doesn't seem shocking to me.
It's not shocking. But, you know, it was viewed as controversial when I mentioned it, which still sort of bewilders me. Yeah. Anyway, so that's some of the wonderful things going on in Central Square. Actually, you did mention Carl Barron Plaza. Mm-hmm. And Amazon,
yes,
right?
Yes,
so,
yes, Amazon.
On the Central Square Advisory Committee last week, we actually had to have, I think it was last week, maybe it was the week before, we had to have a hearing having to do with the special permit application from the Amazon place, which has already been operating.
Yes.
But in a perfectly correct world, they probably should have gotten the permit and the hearings first before opening, but that's just not how it worked out.
No.
But it was the first instance of an application under the new formula business ordinance that was part of the Central Square Restoration Petition.
Okay.
Right?
I heard of that.
Yeah. So anyway, it was important because the first case sort of could be potentially setting precedent or not. Right? So I spoke at the planning board about it as well. But the person who wrote this just happens to be this fellow right this. This fellow right here.
Hi.
And my understanding is that the formula business ordinance eclipsed what was used to be the fast food ordinance.
Yes, the fast food cap and
it's gone.
Yes, on
is that that's gone just sit at Central Square, but it's
Central Square is the only place that had the fast food cap. And the other weird sort of picadillo about fast food use, which is very antiquated, I might add, is that all fast food uses require a special permit, regardless of where they are, and including change of ownership. Like I said before, if we owned our, you know, Pat and Robert's hamburger joint, and we sold it to,
We're in discussion about that.
we sold it to Mark McGovern. Mark McGovern would have to go get a special permit to operate the exact same use that we just currently were operating for generations.
Right. And, you know, not to jump all the way into Envision right now, but that whole discussion about uses and tables of uses and what should be allowed as of right without the need to get special permits, I don't know that that was ever a part of our discussions with Envision.
No, and it's one of my sort of top number one gripes about it. I just don't know how, I mean, if you're master planning, which, you know, Dennis Carlone, what a great idea it was to master plan. Just kidding, it was terrible. Why wouldn't you begin with the premise of how that plan is laid out, which is like the definitions of words and the allowed uses in certain districts of the city? That way you can then sort of map out where you want things to be and what they even mean. For instance, fast food, the way it's defined in the ordinance, is not what I think people generally think of as being fast food. So it's almost, it has a metric that's associated with it that, you know, a certain amount of people have to eat indoors, a certain amount of, like, types of flatware and silverware.
They defined it largely by the utensils.
Yeah, yeah. The auditing of, you know, is ISD down at Wendy's going, yeah,
it's
well,
inspectional services.
You know, 14 people ate there today, so yeah, that's 70% of the total. Yeah. Like, no, it's just nonsense.
I mean, the thing is that there are certain rules that were put in place in the city, including things like liquor caps, liquor license caps, which has largely been completely changed now.
Yeah, it's...
Which, for the better, I think.
Liquor everywhere is a main
thing. Right. Right. But the thing is, there was a time when it was concerned about the proliferation of liquor licenses. So they, you know, put in ordinances to cap it. But I think it was during the time when Brian Murphy was on the council and several others where they kind of had a more enlightened view that maybe it would be helpful for businesses to be able to serve alcohol.
Or a more sarcastic viewpoint is that they had a whole budding area of the city that was almost completely hindered by the inability to get them liquor permits,
right?
Or liquor licenses, which is Kendall Square. Yeah. So all these restaurants opened up, and you can't in this day and age have a restaurant or a hotel without a liquor license. It's impossible.
Yeah.
So with these arbitrary caps, which technically were really never on the books anyway, it just made sense. And Lisa, I think Lisa has done a fantastic job of. Did I get that right? Lisa Marotti Fuhrer.
Nick. Nicole Ferrari. I always mess up.
Sorry, Nicole.
Anyway, the head of the license commission, I think, is doing a great job.
Absolutely.
As well.
Fantastic.
Right. Which is under trying circumstances, because if you've got a series of sort of quasi regulations that are kind of traditional, they're sort of in place, but they're not really carved in stone.
Right.
And you're trying to make sense out of this rat's nest of sort of pseudo regulations. Right. It's not easy to be sort of in charge during a period like that. So I think she's navigated those waters quite well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But the thing is that, so there were, I remember actually 25 more years ago when they were instituting some of these caps or preserving or changing some of the cap zones, that there was at least a perception of need to do things like that at the time. Times have changed. Right, we didn't have any sidewalk dining then either.
So well, the fast food cap was primarily about trash, and that's the
right. And I remember that as well. And back then, and it's
polystyrene and you know,
right. But it was called fast food ordinance because there was a proliferation of, like, in Central Square, we had McDonald's, Burger King, this, that, and I think that's kind of what they were thinking, you know. And they didn't want to have. I think to some degree there was a lot of snotty people who just wanted to regulate those.
Yeah, well, then,
kinds of establishments.
Now, what we consider to be fast food is like Life Alive is technically fast food.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So Toscanini's is fast food.
Exactly. So you know, the regulations, even if there was a rational basis at one time, that it kind of expired.
Well, that's where Hugh Russell and I actually really agree on is, you know, zoning is not...
Hugh Russell is a member of the planning board.
Is not this. No, they're not these tablets that you come down from the mountain and say, thou shall not fast food. They're things that are sort of time-related in that you have to go back and look every 20 years, I think, is a good time set to say, okay, you know, are these laws, you know, following where we are? Like right now, the use table dates back to before every modern convenience you can think of, cell phones, computers, right. You know, horseless carriage. It's just, it's ridiculous that you're set in that zone where they, you just
right.
find
so, some... So now, of all the sort of big chain type fast food places like McDonald's, we have just McDonald's left. And quite honestly, having a McDonald's in Central Square actually provides affordable food opportunities for a lot of people whose incomes are not the greatest. So it's actually a really important institution.
I know a certain gourmet ice cream maker who lives by the Big Mac.
I
think fast food isn't what people thought it was.
No, it really isn't. But the thing is, what also happened, I remember when the Holmes building went in around 2000, 2001 or whatever, some of the frontages there that were supposed to be like cafes and whatever just became, you know, just because of the times, became things like bank frontages, which were sort of dead.
Yeah.
You know, when you want to have a cafe, instead you got an ATM machine. Where you wanted to have something like a retail outlet, you ended up with a phone store, which was more billboard than it was store.
Right.
Because it was when people were just trying to like put their name out for whatever the cell phone company was. So whatever was envisioned as sort of what should have been there wasn't what we got. And we got a proliferation of banks.
Right.
I think property owners, you know, you can't blame them. The thing is, if a bank is willing to sign a long-term lease a triple net or something. You can't blame them for signing on to the good deal.
It's really hard to explain that calculus to people who don't deal with it on a regular basis, but the stability, oftentimes buildings are owned subject to a mortgage. The bank looks at the leases that you have. So a lot of the time, the creditworthiness of a tenant is tantamount to even getting your mortgage or maintaining your mortgage in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's not, I told you before, we're evil, we're terrible human beings. Any property owner, developer, just awful. But, you know, there's a lot of logic that goes behind what actually gets done.
Notice I didn't disagree. Right?
No, you did not.
There you go. But the thing is what happened over time is the perception that the assault on the public good with things like fast food things, that just went away.
Yeah.
And then people, whenever you go to some public meeting, they would say, like, oh, there's nothing but banks, there's nothing but phone stores, there's nothing but this and that. So I think there was at least some desire to curtail it somehow.
As part of that zoning package that included the formula business ordinance, which got passed in a very strange way, just so people know, that initially the formula business ordinance was supposed to be taken out of the Central Square restoration petition and looked at separately, because I had written a whole revision for that that never got reintroduced because it was never supposed to be part of the package, and then the council just sort of passed it. But
yeah, I think sometimes they don't always
I don't think they knew that they passed
it. Because I tell you, I was paying very close attention and I was there, and when they passed it, I said, wait a minute, did that actually include the formula business provision?
Absolutely
in there?
Did.
And I said, was that supposed
Madam
to be
Madam Clerk
there?
Was quick to remind me.
Yes.
As part of the package, we also reduced we made very stringent design guidelines for banks. Yeah. So like a bank like Santander, which has a humongous storefront, when they depart their shores, a bank of that size can never go back into that space.
Right. No, I think if I were to sort of identify what I could consider to be the highest priority in terms of what you'd want to preserve in a place like Central Square, and not just Central Square, it's just active retail use.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you do that in any sort of legal way. I was actually trying to make the case that if you had a place that was an active retail use for decades and decades and decades, then that's sort of part of the history of the place. And I actually was reading some of the language of the formula business sort of saying about preserving the unique architectural and historical stuff. And I said, well, retail, it's historical.
Well,
I don't think I convinced anybody.
No, but the devil, I think the formula business as currently in the ordinance is completely imperfect. It requires a significant fine tuning. However,
And if there is a fine tuning, they could be exported to serve other neighborhoods in Cambridge as well.
Absolutely. I think the Harvard Square Neighborhood Association tried to hijack that a little bit. And I told them, you know, if you look at Harvard Square, 90% of all retail is formula business. So if you wanted to pass something and make everything nonconforming, I could never be a part of that. But just to think in terms of the uniqueness of each individual square, because they are, you know, like little snowflakes, very unique. But for a central square, I don't think you really care so much about who's coming to town necessarily, as much as you said, keep the space active. And that, I now having had some chops in zoning, I think it comes more from design guidelines than it does from actual hard zoning language.
Yeah, but the one thing I found sort of disappointing was when, you know, our first test case of formula business, it was all coming down to an argument about colors and fonts. And I thought,
there was a lot of talk about orange.
Yeah, the color, whether it should be the color orange. And one of the planning board members said, well, I don't like the color orange.
Jan Devereaux.
I know, well, she loves the color orange because of Princeton, right? Mm-hmm. But it was funny, the person who said, I think there was one member of the planning board was wearing orange. You know, and I thought, oh
that's embarrassing.
Fight. Right?
But it was never supposed to be about that.
It wasn't supposed to be
about
that.
So that's kind of, they missed the mark a little bit.
Yeah. So anyway, it would be nice to sort of see how it evolves in the coming years. Maybe there'll be some revisions. I think that would be a really great thing. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know if we should sort of transition here to some of the other things that happened. Maybe just get started here, right? You know, Envision Cambridge, and I serve on the advisory committee for that, as well as the housing working group.
Brass knuckles on for that one.
Right. So that was actually the subject of a little bit of controversy the last couple of weeks at City Council, because there was some provisions, probably not worth going too deep into those provisions. I think we talked it to death at this point. But the thing is that there was an order from Councillor Zondervan that said because there was these particular provisions that are housing related got pushed forward and got a very, very negative reaction in a lot of neighborhood associations, whatever, that now the entire 3-year process of Envision Cambridge is being defined by these three things that weren't didn't go over super well, yeah. And they and it bothered them.
I almost like wish there was a separate camera so we could go to camera three and pull have a private conversation with CDD and say, you know, we need to talk about your PR because
it really was a PR disaster.
I think that's the message. You know, they got the business last night a little bit from a few counselors about outreach and what was required for outreach. And I'm not sure that that necessarily is the problem.
They actually tried to do outreach. Yeah. It's just, it's very hard to do.
Well, I think as a person who spent, you know, who did time on the Red Ribbon Commission and C2 Commission, you would have to almost bribe me with brown liquor and pizza on a daily basis to participate in any city process ever again. Because what winds up happening is it gets bogged down in these meetings. You get sort of attacked by the occasional onlooker who thinks you're somehow now part of a weird development cabal, or worse. And what winds up happening is the city kind of leaves you hanging out to dry, so that when you finish the process, you know, you're kind of looking around being like, you know, I'm going to go streak through the quad with C2, and you're really doing it by yourself.
Right.
And the city's like, oh, we don't like this, or we didn't like that, or, and instead of saying like, okay, we did this study, we have the data, let's look at it and figure out what we can live with. They say, put it on the shelf and we'll do it later.
Would you say that when you or other members of the C2 committee expressed yourself clearly, mm-hmm. was the city kind of really learning from you guys and really reflecting what your thinking was, or was it the other way around?
Right? I know the question you're asking. I think...
Right, we've got a break in a second here, but go ahead.
I think it seemed as if later in the process, especially, that the answers were already known, and that they were searching for us to say the magic words that they could add to sort of back up their original contention.
In addition to sort of improving PR, I think that's the one criticism I would specifically make is, mm-hmm. is actually listen to the members of your advisories.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Bye.